Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
And of course, you're live on Freedom 106.5 FM. And Davey's here with me. This is Jody White. And if you are interested in agriculture, innovation, and sustainability, well, this is the show every single week on Thursdays, 10 to 11 a.m., that you want to stay tuned. Of course, joining me today, I have Miss Cindy Ann Currency of the Digicel Foundation, and I have Mr. Tobias Franking from Uber Green and some other entities related to cocoa. And today's discussion is investing in sustainable agro projects. So Cindy, let's start with you. Digicel Foundation, welcome.
Hi Jody, thanks so much for having us.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself professionally and then about the foundation.
Okay, well, I'm the head of operations at Digicel Foundation. I've worked at the Digicel Foundation for the past 10 years. So I've been there from the very early beginnings of the foundation, because we only started in 2012. I've been responsible for, you know, the setup, stakeholder engagement. I do a lot of our media and PR stuff. And one of my biggest parts of my portfolio is the actual project involvement. So I am the person, as you said, go around the country looking at all of the projects, meeting our project partners and seeing, walking them through the different stages of their projects, from planning to implementation to execution to when they unveil it to their community and the media.
And Tobias, tell us a little bit more about yourself and the organizations that you represent.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Hi, Jody. Hi, Cindy Ann. Thanks for having me, Jody. I'm the co-founder and director of Uber Green. That's a group of companies that, among other things, makes bean-to-bar chocolates locally with a focus on export markets, as well as some sustainability consulting that we are doing through Uber Green. So we have a pretty broad portfolio there in terms of renewables, in terms of climate smart agriculture, in terms of climate risk assessments. But I'm also the manager of the original Trinitario Cocoa Education Foundation, or the OTC in short. And the OTC is a group of private sector entities that got together under this not-for-profit umbrella to push the cocoa industry forward. So we're doing trainings with farmers, with chocolate makers, and everybody in between. So happy to explore this a little further this morning.
So Tobias, I recently visited your location, and there was a solar-powered storage unit for cocoa that the Digicel Foundation had a hand in supporting. Could you tell us a little bit more about that unit?
Sure. So this is a climate smart cocoa storage unit powered by solar panels, as you said. This was initially designed and built in its, let's say, conventional form by the UWE Cocoa Research Center with funds from the Inter-American Development Bank, because we understand that cocoa needs to be stored properly. After all this work that takes place on the farm, we've seen too many times that farmers lose this valuable crop due to improper storage conditions. So we teamed up with the Cocoa Research Center, the OTC, teamed up with Cocoa Research, and they built it in its original form, where we have temperature and humidity control inside, but at the time it was powered by conventional grid electricity. So we approached the Digicel Foundation under the EPIC program, and I must say this has been a fantastic experience with Cindy and the team. And they saw the value in developing this demonstration site, this pilot program to show that it's possible to have low carbon or zero carbon climate smart cocoa storage in Trinidad and Tobago. And we've designed it with Renew TT, a local company specializing in solar panels and other renewable energy solutions. So over the past 6 months, this was conceptualized and built. And now we can say that we have the first carbon neutral cocoa storage facility at least in Trinidad and Tobago, and maybe the region as well.
Ms. Currency, the foundation has an appetite for sustainable projects.
Yes, we do.
Why this word sustainability? Why is sustainability so important for us and for the foundation?
For the foundation, definitely, because we want to know that when we invest our funds into community aspects, into community projects, that it goes on beyond our funding. The funding will come to an end. Our partnership will come to an end in terms of our contract and what we are responsible for. But we really want the groups and the community to be able to experience and to benefit from whatever their project outputs or outcomes are. And that's why sustainability is really key in it. And so it's one of the criteria whenever we offer an EPIC grant. We ask you, are there other collaborators on board? Do you want to maybe work with or reach out to some of your public sector partners? There's your council or the corporation. Like, you need other people involved to keep this up. And then we do ask the groups if they have other financial ventures to help them if they need to put more funding into it. And in most instances, we encourage them that whatever the project is, can you then develop this into some kind of income generator so that you can actually continue to carry on your project without reaching out for additional funding?
You said this is the EPIC program?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So EPIC is Extraordinary Projects Impacting Communities. It's a grant initiative that we started back in 2016. Initially, when we started it, it was a small grant. So it was $5,000, about 35,000 TT. And then we did that up until we turned 10 in 2022. And when we celebrated our 10th anniversary, we decided to increase the EPIC grant to $100,000. And that year, we offered 10 grants of $100,000. It was $1 million project to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. So less projects, because in the beginning, we had like 20, 25 projects a year. So less projects, but a larger investment, and therefore we expected larger impact. This year, our last financial year, which started last April, we partnered with Shell Trinidad and Tobago, and we again offered that $100,000 grant to 10 NGOs, and we then introduced three categories, agriculture, the environment, and renewable energy. And so we only accepted grant applications that fit within that criteria. We got about 117 applications from the general public. That's to show you where the interest is. And then we started to shortlist, like just going through, you know, what will work, what we think wouldn't work. Some groups didn't provide all of the information that was required as part of the application and the shortlisting process. And then we came down to about 30. And the 30 NGOs, they then had an opportunity to deliver a 3-minute pitch presentation to a panel of judges, both from Shell Trinidad and Tobago and from Digicel Foundation, telling us about their projects. And from the 30, we then selected 10. And that's where we got this year. That's why you're seeing a lot of renewable energy, a lot of agriculture. Now, we've noticed in the past 5 years that our EPIC applicants have been a lot of agricultural projects. That happened on its own. That's all organic. That's coming out of Trinidad and Tobago. And so in deciding to partner with Shell last year, we said, well, this is always happening, so can we include agriculture? Shell, they have their strategic objectives in terms of renewable energy. So we said, let's include renewable energy. And of course, the environment was just a natural fit.
Tobias, this solar-powered temperature and humidity control storage unit, what was the problem, or what were the problems that you were seeing that led you to reach for this solution?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jody. As we all know, cocoa is converted to chocolate or other food items, right? So it is important that the quality of the input there is maintained throughout the storage process. And having worked in the industry for 10 years, I'm from Germany originally, but been living here for over a decade, I noticed that in many instances, after, as I said earlier, this hard work on the farm level, you know, the planting, the reaping, the post-harvest sweating and drying of cocoa beans, in many cases, storage is inadequate. So that means that you have mold development because of inadequate moisture control. You have moth and other insect infestations that can get very, very bad. I've seen quite shocking instances where these moths have really taken over, and yet still in some cases these beans are still sold after being treated maybe with some insecticides or so on, which is of course also bad for human health and bad for human consumption. So we've noticed that there are many challenges in storage in particular. So we want to give farmers the opportunity to store their beans in a temperature and humidity controlled environment where we can regulate and where we can maintain the high quality of cocoa beans that will go then into value-add products. And there's a whole list of products that are possible that can be made from cacao. It's not only chocolate, but there are spa products, there are beverages, you know, the famous cocoa tea, you know, chocolate drinks and others. So this initiative really aims to provide farmers with the opportunity to sell their beans at the highest possible price because they can maintain the quality also at the storage stage of their work.
Now, for those of you listeners who are curious to know what does this look like, we at Freedom 106.5 FM actually visited the unit and we did a very short video on it. If you go over to the Freedom 106.5 FM's social media channels, you should see a short video on it. And for a description, it's about, well, Tobias, you know, you describe it for us. What does this unit look like?
Right, so this is a 20-foot container, so a standard shipping container, the small one, I would say. There are 20 and 40-foot containers. This is a 20-foot container that we've elevated, that we've modified to basically accommodate two air-conditioned units because we have two sub-units, two sort of spaces inside where we could store cocoa beans or other products. So we can store, for example, conventional or organic certified, so have it separated. But this container, yes, it was refurbished, and on top there are six solar panels that would generate the electricity to run the equipment inside. So the air conditioned units, the dehumidifiers, we have some LED lights, and we also have an insect light. So it's basically a normal container, but with solar panels and on top, and equipped with some purpose-built appliances.
Ms. Carnes, the Digicel Foundation is a non-profit foundation.
Yes, we are a corporate non-profit, correct.
So air grants, or the air support, of course they get excited. Or I should say we.
As they should.
We get excited. Where can people then go to see more information on how they can possibly apply and benefit?
Okay, so there's a where and there's a when. So the where would be our website, digicelfoundation.org. We recently just redid and relaunched our new website. You can also visit our social media pages, Digicel Foundation TT. We're found on Instagram and on Facebook, and we also have a LinkedIn page, right? Digicel Foundation TT. The when for to access EPIC grant funding, which happens annually, we do a call for applications. We do a public call for applications that runs for about a month. And we do that via our social media platforms. So you will see around, probably in May, we will start to do our rounds of media. You'll see us on TV talking about it. We'll come on radio to talk about it. We'll also do a lot of ads on social telling people about it. And then we'll send out through our network and our communities to let them know this is now a new opportunity to apply for EPIC. And within that opportunity, it tells you what the criteria is this year. What are we looking for? And we also try throughout that period, that month, to give people tips. Because sometimes you think because I have a good idea, this is worth the grant funding, but it doesn't really work that way, right? Remember, there is a criteria. We're looking for certain things, and there are things that will be that will strengthen your application form. So we try to give some tips for NGOs or persons who want to apply throughout the entire month where the application is being issued. And we encourage you to, again, collaborate, look for others that you can work with in your community to widen your impact. We ask you to pay specific attention to your budget because we are not the type of NGO to give you $100,000 for a project that's $1 million and then tell you go out and find the rest. We want to know that the $100,000 will start and finish your project so that at the end, your beneficiaries can come in and start to really use it and feel that impact and we could see the outcomes. So the when is usually in May at the beginning of our financial year, which started in April, and we will run that for about a month and a half, depending on how the applications come in. and then we will start our process. But we usually keep people quite updated on our social media pages.
Is this only open to NGOs?
Yes and yes. So as a foundation, our guidelines prohibit us from working in particular spaces. So we tend to reach out to registered nonprofit organizations. However, this can include and usually does include faith-based organizations, because we do understand in some communities, the church or the mosque or the kutia, they are the community change makers, right? So we open it out to faith-based organizations once the project is open to the rest of the community and not restricted to the particular religious organizations. We also look at community-based organizations. Sometimes you have smaller groups. It could be village councils. You know, they may not be registered non-profit organizations. They'd be registered as an NGO. Sporting facilities, sporting clubs. You know, a lot of the police youth clubs, a lot of those organizations also apply. In some instances, we might get like a private sector person. Maybe it's a person who's a shopkeeper down the road. They have a great idea. What we tend to tell those and even our public state agencies, find an NGO within that community, because there is one. There's more than one to work with, so that they can be the custodians of the grants and then they can help them in terms of the project implementation and the management.
Tobias, the unit that you have, when do you think it's going to start to be utilized?
Well, the unit is basically completed. We're doing some minor changes currently. For example, we are lifting the battery a little bit above the ground so that in case the air condition starts spitting out some water, we will have no damage. But we are in the last sort of in the last days, or I would say maybe two more weeks until it's fully operational, and we will use it immediately. There is need from the cluster members, from the OTC members, to store their cocoa beans immediately, because this is the ideal and optimal solution for cocoa storage. And if I may just add, Jody, the Cocoa Research Center, the UWE Cocoa Research Center, is literally right next door. And UWE Cocoa Research also offers processing services from cocoa beans to basically any downstream value add product. So if anybody is interested in converting their cocoa beans to chocolates, to nibs, Cocoa Research can do this, and they are doing it for members of the OTC. So it's very conveniently located, we will basically start using it, as I would say, as soon as May.
You have any plans to duplicate this unit and introduce it to other areas?
Other areas out in the agri space, you mean, or other?
Yeah,
areas
like build another one and have it on other farms.
Other farms.
Yeah, if you're going to build more of them and you're going to put them around the country.
Yeah, well, this is the idea, right? So this is a demonstration and a pilot phase where we identify the costs, the processes, the time it takes. But certainly, this is going to be available for other communities, and we want to replicate this model throughout the country and the region, especially in areas that are disconnected from the grid, where there are large cocoa producers that are faced with this challenge.
Tobias, I think we have...
This is also possible for other crops.
Okay, great. Sorry, we had a call, but I think it just dropped off. So, Ms. Currency, what would have made a project like this attractive?
The innovation, definitely. It was the only only project of its kind being submitted. The fact that they were also trying to solve a problem by helping the farmers, the cocoa farmers, find a way to make their livelihoods more sustainable. So that the use of the progressive thinking in terms of the use of including the solar energy, because when you hear Tobias and his team talk about, you know, why do that? It's totally off grid. So when you look at communities that may have they don't have frequent electricity, you know, it's something that can use, especially for rural communities. So that made it also really attractive, as well as The group was really convincing. So part of their pitch presentation, they had to really dig deep and answer some of those questions that you can't really put in an application form. And they were really able to show that they represented the interests and the needs of this particular group of farmers. And that's what we found really, for us, really attractive, and that we felt it would be great for us to align our brands with a project like this.
Tobias, do you then see that the introduction of this unit can improve the pricing that farmers can receive because the quality of the bean in storage could be improved?
Yes, absolutely. This is a given in this market where quality is of utmost importance. If you speak to any chocolate maker locally or internationally, they will tell you that they are willing to pay the extra dollar or the higher price for high quality cocoa beans. So basically, you're preserving the ability for your produce to fetch the highest possible price in the market, because as you have, for example, mold development or insect infestation, immediately buyers will negotiate the price down, or they will outright reject it. So this is certainly a way for farmers to ensure that they can get the best price. Of course, there's in the international market space quite an interesting development with global prices surging recently, global cocoa prices. And we have to find an answer to how that could be useful for the industry as a whole. For farmers, yes, they need higher farm gate prices, but at the same time, business models for value add companies also need to remain.
Okay, Tobias, I think we have one quick call. I want to take it quickly. You're live on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Judy. Interesting conversation. I just want to add, I am from the Montserrat Hills in central Trinidad, where we have maybe one of the best flavored cocoa in the world. But I do have a concern about, not a concern, I just like to share something with Mr. Tobias when he talk about temperature controls for insect management, and that it is an excellent thing. But as he said, people spray all kind of insecticide that leave residue on the product that can cause health problems in the long term. In those circumstances, you can use an appropriate fumigant, which is a gas that, based on your dosage, you get rid of the larva, the eggs, and everything without any type of residue. I mean, I have seen in the central area where people use methylbromide, something which is banned, and they just puncture it in and throw it in the container, which is totally, totally unacceptable. So I would just like to share that, because temperature control and pest management is an extremely, extremely important factor. I just thought I'd share that with you.
Thank you very much, caller. Of course, Tobias, I know in addition to this work that you are doing post-harvest, you were also responsible for getting some farms to organic certification.
Yes, that's right. We've done it already with three farms locally.
So, that's excellent to look at the entire value chain. And of course, we'd always urge, and me in the agriculture sector as well. I mean, I have seen, unfortunately, there were farmers that were utilizing certain chemicals are not observing the correct application rates, or what we call harvest time after, was leaving it for this number of days after before it's consumed. So definitely, caller, I do appreciate that. I share your sentiments. Tobias, you also have an initiative that involves training for farmers, I believe, in the production for cocoa. Am I mistaken?
Yes, thanks for bringing this up, Jody. So this is a training program that is funded by Angostura, House of Angostura, and their Cocoa Bitters program, and executed through the OTC. So you all, who's ever interested, can follow us on Original Trinitario Cocoa Education Foundation on Instagram, or you can visit the OTCTT.org website. So the training program will start in May and will stretch over 3 months. And we are basically starting from the very beginning. We are starting with soil, what it is, what is the importance, and then we go through agronomy, agroforestry and permaculture, design principles, and how we can really increase productivity on the farm level. Because if you look on a global scale, our productivity per acre is comparatively low if we compare it with countries such as Costa Rica, for example, or others in South America that are also considered fine or flavor cocoa producers. And this training program will be a hybrid program with in-person, but also virtual sessions. And the role of renewable energy in the process and climate smart solutions for cocoa in particular will also be a topic. So I will invite everybody to join us and to reach out to us through our website or our Instagram channels to learn more about the program.
Ms. Currency, if I have a project that I believe, I mean, everybody has a project that I believe in their heart is good.
And that's the truth.
But I would like to self-evaluate to see whether I am ready mm-hmm. to apply for funding through the nonprofit. What are some of the things that I should be asking myself?
You should ask yourself what if your project is meeting a need in your specific, in your particular community. You should ask yourself, who are the beneficiaries? When you do this project, is it just for you and your family? Or is this extend to your community or a particular marginalized community? You should ask yourself, what is the type of change that you want to make with this particular initiative? Because that's important, right? You need to understand that. You should also look at funding. Is this funding that I have, that I can make this happen? Or do I need to reach out to a collaborator to help me co-fund this or to fund this entirely? And then even when you're looking for your funders, you want to know if it's people you want to get in bed with. You know, do I want to take money from this particular person to do this project? You know, if this is my passion project, something that I feel really close to. I would also encourage you to look at impact, right? And not just the output. So sometimes in corporate sector, we tend to focus on the outputs and on how much we gave and how many school bags and how many laptops. But you also want to look at the outcomes, you know. The number of laptops and school bags that I gave, what resulted out of that? How many children were able to do better at school or have access to the internet? That kind of thing. So you want to look at your outcomes, which, right? A deeper story. And I would also tell you to be real with yourself in terms of the time that it will take from you to get this project done. You don't want to start something that you cannot complete. Everybody gets excited about something new and they start it. And then, you know, maybe it's a new interest that takes you away, but also look at your capacity to take on this project and follow through with it.
Tobias, what was the process like in applying for funding? And here's the reason why I'm asking. There is a general consensus in Trinidad that I'm not going to apply for this program or grant because I am going to get it, because I am friends with somebody.
All right.
And I myself have applied for many programs and have gotten through without having that connection. Could you please tell me about your process of applying and becoming successful with it?
Sure, Jody. Well, and I would like to say that in this particular epic instance, this must have also been the case. It was a very transparent and unbiased process, I would say. I'm certainly somebody who is an outsider, even though we have a lot of local folks in the OTC that are contributors. But this was also not due to any connections that we had. So the process was pretty straightforward. We identified the call by just screening the environment, looking, you know, on a regular basis, what is out there, what are the opportunities that are aligned with our mission. And the mission really is to assist farmers and value add the companies and individuals in the cocoa space. And it was a several tiered process. So first you started with almost like a concept note. And if I remember correctly, Digicel Foundation had provided some sort of like a guiding questionnaire where you could outline what your organization is all about. And then you further refined it as you passed the stages. And then ultimately we had the pitch. So what I would suggest to everybody who is interested in developing such a project is to keep an eye out on what's out there, and also read it very meticulously. There are all the guidance of what is important is typically there. It's just to study it well and respond to the specific call and the specific areas that are requested by the donors, in this case, Digicel Foundation and Shell.
Ms. Karen, anything to add to that?
Yeah, and I'm glad that Tobias said that, because we don't know him, right? So it clearly wasn't connections. But paying attention is really important. The information is out there. Pay attention. So that's definitely one of the number one things that we would say. Ask for feedback. Sometimes you have the idea before you apply and you just want to make sure it's fine to send an email, you know, send a note to the person, a DM on social media to say, I have this project idea. I want to get some information. Ask for feedback, right? And you do get that kind of guidance. We do it because we don't want you to waste your time, and we also want to guide you and help you as much as we can within, you know, staying within the parameters of what's fair and what's transparent. We also like to be transparent with our feedback. So even if you're not successful, and we send that email to you, thank you, we got your application form. You did not meet the criteria. You weren't successful. If you do want feedback on your specific application form, reach out. And sometimes people do, and I have meetings with them, and I go through and I say, this is what you did. You should have done this. You should have made this stronger. And we give them that kind of feedback.
Can I reapply the next year?
You can reapply. You can reapply any number of years. There's a group that got this year, Deltones Institute for Music and Steel Drums. Deltones applied maybe three or four years in a row. Right, and got through this year, so you can reapply. It's open to once you meet the criteria to access the fund, right? One of the other things that we tend to tell persons is understand what your grantor's areas of focus are, right? If we're saying EPIC in the beginning was open to community spaces, indoor and outdoor spaces, so if you had a space in your community center that you wanted to develop into a computer lab or use friendly space, or you had a basketball court that needed sprucing up, and you can apply for an EPIC grant for that. But within the last year, with Shell Trinidad Tobago on board, we decided we're going to focus on these three areas: agriculture, environment, and renewable energy. So you have to pay attention to what the areas of focus are. It doesn't mean that we don't care about youth-friendly spaces. It doesn't mean that we don't care about sports. It doesn't mean that we don't care about cancer awareness. You understand? But this is the area of focus. You have to pay attention to these things and look at where the grantor is offering the grant.
Makes sense. Tobias, I like that you have considered the entire value chain in that, okay, you want to increase production, but now you're going to have more beans and you have to consider storage. So that is key. Would you say that there is excess demand that we cannot supply for local cocoa?
Yes, I would say in general, there are some chocolate makers who would be very happy to see more beans available on the market. Keep in mind that the industry was designed several decades ago in a way that there were large consolidators of bean buyers that were then shipping container loads of cocoa beans to Europe and to North America. That has changed. So the structure of the industry has changed. We have a lot more local value add companies that create, 10 or 20 times the value than the bean itself is worth. And we want to promote that, and the OTC really focuses on also building capacity among those companies and individuals. And I know from many that they are looking for high quality beans. And in many cases, they would like to also enter export markets. But because of the lack of beans, that is being hindered.
Now, what are some of the reasons then that we're seeing for our productivity falling to this low level?
Well, there are many, many factors. One of them is that there was an insufficient investment into the farms over the past 20, 30 years. For example, you could replant young trees that as trees grow older, they become less productive. So there's a certain peak that they, once they pass 20 or 30 years of age, they will, their production will decline. So there wasn't sufficient investment. There is a problem with shade management. There's a lot of shade as overgrowing trees are covering cocoa trees. So that means you need to invest into, you know, laborers to remove the excessive shade. And there's also issues with compatibility of clones that are being, or varietals that are being planted. So there are many different factors, but there are some solutions to it. There's, of course, also pest and disease management that is important. We've seen that many areas are affected by witch's broom, which is a fungal disease. We are seeing that squirrels and parrots are eating up cocoa pods. So there are some tech-based solutions to that, but they cost money. So it's important that we share knowledge, and the OTC is a forum where farmers can share experiences and really build capacity by collaborating, and not, you know, individuals doing their own thing without sharing what they know. So this is the underlying principle of the OTC.
Ms. Currency, can you tell us a little bit about some of the other projects that the foundation has been involved in?
Involved in overall or just within the EPIC grants?
Overall.
Overall. Okay, so we focus on three main areas, and we do a lot of work. A lot of our, we call it champions for persons with disabilities. And so a lot of our investment and our annual budget goes into supporting initiatives that improve opportunities for persons with disabilities. We partner, one of our biggest partners, and I guess it was Digicel's first partner when they came to Trinidad and Tobago, is the Special Olympics Trinidad and Tobago. So we invest a lot with that in terms of our, we partner with them. We're not a sponsor. They're a long life partner of ours. And this means it translates into sport for development. We do a community training program with them. We help the athletes with their national games, which is coming up. So stay tuned and listen out for that. We help them when they have to go off to their world games, you know, which happens every 2 years. And then they also have like a Caribbean beach games and a beach games here that happens locally. So anything like that to work with the athletes and to strengthen the coaches and just the capacity of Special Olympics around Tobago, we've been there, right? Last year was a big deal for us as well. We helped them unveil their secretariat. They got a space at the Mani Ramdrum Stadium from the Ministry of Sport and Sport TT. And so we are able to provide some extra funding for them to outfit that space and make it into their headquarters. So now they have a home. Our other area of focus is our community development, where our EPIC grant lies. And under community development, we tend to partner with our change agents. So we want to transform spaces in Trinidad and Tobago, right? Ingrained in the entire Digicel DNA is wherever Digicel grows, the communities around it must grow as well. And so we want to work with the persons on the ground to help them transform their spaces into spaces that can reflect and create change. And our third area, because we are Total Telecom, the Total Communications Company, is digital citizenship. And this is where we invest in particular girls and rural communities, but we're also open to the public. We want to increase access to the internet and to technology so that persons can equally participate in the digital world as it is.
You know, you mentioned the Special Olympics. For the listeners, I don't know if you remember years ago on television, there was a show called Hardcore, like a fitness show, and I was actually the host of that. And in one of our episodes, we partnered with the Special Olympic organization in Trinidad, and our fitness team went up against the Special Olympic team in a number of events, from 100 meter, 200 meter, 400 meter races, a basketball game. And they completely wiped the floor with us.
Yeah.
I've been people here at Special Olympics, and they, you know, they made downplay the skill, ability, and achievements. And believe me, they're talented, they're fast, and they're good at what they do.
They're athletes. They're trained. They spend the entire year training. They're trained athletes. And so we sometimes take that for granted. And so we are part of that journey. And we're so thankful for Special Olympics for allowing us to be on that journey with them, part of that journey to build awareness and to let people know how outstanding these athletes are. And so we support them 100%. We're there with them. We're walking with them. And it's and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because part of our staff engagement as well, where we connect our staff to the causes that are important to us, but also we want to connect them to causes that are important to them. We did like a Play Unified, where you would bring persons with and without disabilities to come together and play a sport together. And you see it.
We didn't just get licks, it was televised. Right? Tobias, now, the productivity in the fields, you're saying it's a little bit low. What percent do you think we have to increase our productivity by if we're going to be on the level that we need to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it also depends on farm to farm. Some farms are more productive because they're better managed. Some are, you know, semi-abandoned, and they are just picked basically as an opportunity to make a little money to supplement the other farm income. So just to give you some figures, a recent census by the Coco Research Center, and I think together with the Coco Development Company of Trinidad and Tobago, found that the average yield is about 200 kilograms of dried cocoa beans per acre in Trinidad and Tobago. And that is in comparison to countries like Costa Rica, as I said, or Ecuador, Peru, some other fine flavor producing nations, about a fifth of what others produce, right? So others produce up to one metric ton per acre. So I think there's a lot of potential to increase the productivity. But even if we were to double it or to reach somewhere around 500 kilograms, that would already be quite an achievement, because right now, in many cases, farms are struggling to survive, especially when they depend on cocoa alone. So we encourage farmers to plant the right companion crops and understand also that they are running a business. Farming is a business, and Jody, you know that. You've been in the industry for many years. And farmers need to also understand the cost implications of certain strategies. So part of our training program is also to focus on the business aspects, on the financial literacy, on the communications and marketing aspects for farmers to better understand what drives costs and what is a good investment into measures to increase productivity. And there are some ways to achieving that. For example, proper pruning and shade management is one, supplementing with younger plants. So there are certain things that can be done, but they come at a cost. So since resources are limited, we encourage farmers to fully understand the business that they're running, in terms of costs and revenues, and then make the right decisions based on the context that they're in, based on the state, access to certain plots, productivity of certain plots, keeping data points and records, understanding which plots in the farm are more productive than others, and then come up with solutions for each of those plots on how to maximize productivity.
And I was told that you also have an interest in, or you have set up nurseries as well.
Indeed, we have. And this is one very exciting activity that we've been doing over the past year and a half. We've designed, first conceptually, but then also built three nurseries, one in Tamana, one in Grandcouver, and one in Maraca St. Joseph, where we're propagating, grafting, very specific varietals of cocoa that are not only productive, high-yielding varietals, but also that are more tolerant and resilient to diseases and to the changes that we are seeing in weather patterns, that are more robust as they are more tolerant to, let's say, extended periods of drought and heat, or that they can deal better with excess humidity during extended rain periods, right? So these are ICS varietals or TSH varietals. So these are cocoa varieties that are hybrids. and we have selected those that are that have the preferable treats to cope with climate change and also at the same time increase the productivity on the farm, and that are compatible with other varietals. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening. So we're teaching the youth how to graft, how to propagate. These are essential skills for farmers, because that way you can make clones. You can basically make identical copies of those trees that you already have, from which you know that they are good producers. They are, and for all farmers that are listening, you would know that you have some trees, whether it is in cocoa or any other crop, that are yielding better than others. So if you know how to graft, how to propagate, then you can make basically endless clones of this particular tree, and therefore increase the productivity as well. So we're very excited that we last year launched these cocoa and other nurseries. So we are propagating also king orange, avocados, mangoes, and and this will also, as Cindy and mentioned earlier, help to ensure sustainability of these projects that we are doing, because through the sale of the plants, we are generating income for the farmers, and the farmers that benefited from these from the grant funding to build these nurseries, they will pay back a certain small percentage back to the OTC, so that the OTC can fund other farmers to build more nurseries across the country.
Ms. Carranty, somebody like the Trinitario Group that had this idea and made an application through the program, how long between application to disbursement of funds?
Oh, we move really, really quick, which is a great thing about working in the corporate sector. Maybe it's just the dynamic environment that we have at Digicel and at Digicel Foundation. So once the grant was approved, once the partnership was approved, I mean, last year was a little ticklish because, again, we had Shell Trinidad Tobago on board, and they also have some internal processes that the group had to meet in terms of ethics and compliance. But once we knew and we let them know that they've been approved, it was like within a month's time, we had prepared their contracts. Their contracts actually prepared beforehand, gave them about a week or a few days to review it. I went in, got it signed, and once it's signed, the disbursement of funds happens within 7 days, right? Within five to seven days, you'll have your first disbursement. So we do it in three disbursements. After your first disbursement, you have to do a report and provide your receipts with your financial report as well to show us proof of expenditure. And of course, you want to know about the project. You want to understand the numbers, how many people were involved, male, female, age groups. We want to understand if they ran into any challenges. You know, what are some recommendations? What are some lessons learned? And then we provide the second grant, the second disbursement to them, right? Once you submit your report and it's approved, you get your second disbursement again within 5 to 7 days. And then, of course, we encourage them to do another report, and then we give you the last disbursement. And within that last disbursement and that other report, we also encourage you to start thinking about how do you want to unveil this initiative to your community. How do you want to plan that? Do you want to launch it? Do you want to invite the media? Is there a minister that you particularly want on board here? But we also encourage them to, it's your community, so you tell us who you want to invite. It's your thing. You would plan it, but we would provide some additional support. If you want us to bring a sound system, we can do that. You know, we can hire somebody to come and do sound for us. We can send out the invitations to the media because we have a really good relationship with them. And then we will come and bring, we will show up, and then that's it.
If I'm in the agro sector, people are listening and they have ideas. Of course, everybody has ideas. But they want to see what types of projects have been awarded in the past. Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere that they can go to see the types of projects that you have worked with?
Yes. So you can definitely see that on our website and on our social media pages. Website, again, is digicelfoundation.org. And social media, Digicel Foundation TT, right, on both Instagram and Facebook. And just to give you a snapshot, so yesterday I told you I was in Barrackpore at the Astra Girls College, and one of the partners, one of our EPIC partners, which would be the Trinidad and Tobago Association of Energy Engineers, they partnered with the Seroptimus International Esperance. And the Seroptimus Club, they adopted Astra Girls in Barrackpore. And so they did a solar-powered drip-to-waste hydroponics system there. And they unveiled it to their community and to their stakeholders yesterday. Last week, I was in Tobago, Canaan Bonacord, at the Buku Historical Park, where they unveiled a crab farm. right? So they are going to rare blue crabs, and their thinking, their objective is to create a standard of size. This is the size that this crab ought to be when it's sold, and they want their crab farmers to also do that, to bear that in mind, the persons that sell the crab, right? So they are doing, they did a crab farm last week. We back in Tobago again with Cardi. They partnered with the division, it's a very long name, but that's just a division of the forestry division in Tobago through the THA, it's Sustainable Resources as well, to work with cocoa farmers. But here was their problem. The pests, I don't want to call them the pests. Birds, loss of crop, loss of crop due to birds. And they, not invented, they introduced an innovative way. It's a 21st century scarecrow, really. It's called a bird squawker deterrent, a sound deterrent.
Yeah.
And they're saying that this sound deterrent will help to deter parrots and coquerels from eating all the cocoa. And this is a $1 million industry. Like, I'm learning all this thing about cocoa through Tobias and his team, and then through the team in Cardi. And they introduced that there with the THA, looking at the data, gathering the data to see, will this work here? And then seeing how they can create a system to give it, to introduce it to other farms, all the farms on Tobago where the cocoa farmers are, to see how they could help them.
You know who's the biggest problem in Barbados for sweet potatoes? Monkeys.
Monkeys.
If you could make a Tarzan call or something to do it. That's quite interesting. Tobias, now you have the storage unit. If there are cocoa farmers who want to get in contact with you because they would like to see if this is a technology that can assist them, how can they reach out to your group?
Well, there are various options. They can visit the website, otctt.org. We have a contact form there, and also we have a membership section. So we encourage folks to become members, to regularly benefit from our updates, from our trainings, from our knowledge sharing platform. And also the OTC website, again, otctt.org, offers members a virtual space to promote their products as well. So our members have the opportunity to basically have their own website embedded in the OTC's website as a subpage. So we help them create the content and tell the stories, market their products. So that is one option. Of course, you can also follow us on Instagram and reach out through a direct message. That's the OTC Foundation TT on Instagram, or you can email me as well at otcfoundationtt@gmail.com.
Now, if people would like to benefit from the training that will be offered on the growing and handling of cocoa, would those be the same methods of contact and sign up?
Yes, absolutely. That is the easiest way to get in touch, and we will be sharing the specific agenda. As I said, we have virtual meetings where everybody could log in from, you know, their device at home, and we have practical sessions where we'll be demonstrating certain pruning, grafting techniques, permaculture strategies. There's going to be a very fun and hands-on program, but there's also going to be some aspects that will be delivered virtually, so that you can do that from home, basically.
Miss Currency, are there any changes or sneak peeks that we can look out for in 2024 from the foundation?
Oh, there's always something going on at the foundation. and the great thing about it is that annually we get to decide and plan our year. And it comes a lot from what we get from our external stakeholders and from the NGO sector, and seeing what's happening in Trinidad and Tobago, that our team could get together and decide, we're seeing this, let's reach out. So again, look out for EPIC. Our call for applications will be issued in May. We are looking to go with a co-funder again, but we liked this energy coming out of the agriculture, renewable energy and environment. So we will include that in our criteria. We're also looking at opening it back up again to indoor and outdoor community spaces so that communities can get really innovative when it comes to when they have to decide what's good for their communities. We love that. Right. So look out for EPIC, $100,000, $1 million investment. Look out for work that we are supporting our Special Olympics, Trinidad and Tobago. They're going to host their Caribbean Beach Games for the first time in Trinidad and Tobago this year in November. So look out for that. We'll be working with them and helping them to promote that, because what the athletes really need is support. They need Trinidad and Tobago to come out and watch them and support them. And so we will help work with them to get the word out there. We also do a lot of work in the space for vulnerable women. So we have a partnership with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we are looking at spaces that provide support and refuge to women and children who are survivors of domestic violence. So look out for those things as well. And of course, in our digital citizenship portfolio, we want to reduce the digital divide. We will either do a camp this year that encourages young people to learn coding or programming, or just exposes them to the basic internet and the computer. And we will also do some computer labs and some community spaces.
So for those of you who have tuned in a little bit late on the show today, we had Miss Cindy Ann Currency from the Digicel Foundation. And we had Mr. Tobias Franking from Uber Green, the Trinitario group as well. And he was discussing the new innovative solar powered temperature and humidity control storage unit. He also would have touched on the upcoming training schedules that they have for people within the cocoa sector. Tobias, I want to open up the floor for any final comments that you may have for our listeners.
Thanks, Jody, also again for inviting me to the show. I think to the listeners, there is potential in the cocoa industry. If you're a farmer, if you're a value-add person who has an innovative idea, there are great opportunities, but they have to be planned well. And I think that's why strategic planning and business planning is important. Approaching it from a business mindset really makes the difference, and that's why we've came up with this training program. And I will encourage folks to reach out either through otcTT.org to contact us, or our Instagram channels to understand what's out there, what are the opportunities, to connect with people in the space, and to understand better what you can do to contribute towards this very exciting and very tasty industry.
very tasty indeed. And, you know, chocolate lovers alone. I remember once I did a trade show in Argentina, and I was all talking with a buyer from Europe. And he's like, so what type of chocolate do you like? I was like, white chocolate. He's like, listen, white chocolate is not chocolate.
You know? Yes. It's actually really just cocoa butter. And milk powder, right? So I would agree with him. I prefer dark chocolate. It's also healthier for you.
Thank you very much, and Miss Currency of the Digicel Foundation. Any closing remarks for our listeners?
I really want our listeners to stay tuned to our social media pages at Digicel Foundation TT. We really try to connect and allow them a space to tell their stories and to share those stories. And so interact with us there, as well as follow and follow the NGO partners and look at how they are creating change in their communities. Because that's what we want to do. We want to transform Trinidad and Tobago. We're not going to do it alone. We are going to do it with our partnerships and through collaborations. And I really want to thank our partners, our corporate sponsors, Michelle Trinidad and Tobago, for coming on board this year with EPIC and helping us create another type of change for TNT.
Oh, that's very much. Thank you so much. Now, next week, we are likely to have a guest from the Caribbean Export Agency. There is a Caribbean Investment Conference happening in Guyana in July. I am a panel speaker at the event, so I would have asked a representative of the conference to come on the show and give us some information on what they expect to happen, what some of the focus, why sustainability, what are some of the issues, and what some of the advancements that we'd like to see happening in the region over the next year. So this has been Agribusiness Innovation on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5.